Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here, and Pastor Steve will be with us shortly. This is Yahweh's Covenant People, and this is part five of Who is Esau Edom? And last time we left off our discussion on page 40 of Charles Wiseman's great book, Who is Esau Edom? And we were getting into the Balfour Declaration. And I'm going to pick it up on page 40, where we had been talking about how the international Jew, primarily the House of Rothschild and their agents such as Chaim Weizmann and Theodor Herzl, were intent on establishing a Jewish state in Palestine. And on page 40, Weizmann states, on Turkey's entry into the war, arch-Zionist and Jew Chaim Weizmann commenced a political campaign on behalf of Zionism. During this period, in 1915, Weizmann met with Britain's first Lord of the Admiralty, Arthur Balfour, explaining to him the historical roots of Zionism. Okay, now, Arthur Balfour was Lord of the Admiralty, and he negotiated with Lord Rothschild for the Balfour Declaration, which essentially turned Palestine over to the Jews. Mr. Balfour had really no authority whatsoever to do this, nor did the British government have any authority to do this, even if they were in control of Palestine militarily. But they were trying to get the Turks to agree to this, to hand over Palestine to the Jews, but the Turks refused to do it. So they connived World War I and getting America involved in World War I when the British were losing, to bring the American army in to fight on behalf of Britain, ultimately taking control of Palestine away from the Turks, who were the allies of the Germans. So continuing here, from Joan Comar's book, Who's Who in Jewish History, Balfour was willing to help promote the idea of restoring the Jewish homeland in Palestine if it was liberated from the Turks. So, Pastor Steve, what's this business? What's this word restoring doing here?
Restoring Jewish homeland. Oy, such a deal we got for you with the chosen people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chosen, all right. Crispy Critters come to mind.
Yeah, I'd say stealing.
They had these guys bamboozled back then. They have been hammering this deal that they're the frozen chosen for so long. They were doing it way back when? 1916 here.
Yeah, that's
1915, 1916. They owned a lot of the media, the print media. They didn't have electronic media back then. But they owned the newspapers and the magazines, just like they do now.
Right.
They're generations deep in this. Generations of their family.
Yeah, amen. Now, it actually is accurate in stating that restoring a Jewish homeland in Palestine, because the Jews, being the descendants of Edom, the Edomites from Idumea, did live in Palestine in those days, you know, when the Romans conquered it and tore down the temple, etc., etc. So it is accurate language, but this says nothing about them being Israelites, because they aren't.
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah.
The Israelites are not supposed to be there now. We're in dispersion.
Right. Yeah.
We have our Israel nations all over the globe. South Africa, United States, Germany, France, white Spain, white Italy.
Yes, and Weizmann covered that. We covered it last in episode 4 last time, okay? So he continues, the following year, 1916, several developments that greatly advanced the cause of Zionism took place. There was a strange cabinet crisis in December 1916, after which Lloyd George became prime minister and Arthur Balfour foreign minister. Okay, so somehow Arthur Balfour moved up from Lord of the Admiralty to Foreign Minister. Both these men and some of their immediate subordinates were outspoken supporters of Zionist aspirations. So why do you think this is?
Who paid who to move him up?
Yeah, right, right. And did the Rothschilds have anything to do with this? You know, hint, 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 okay? With pro-Zionist individuals now controlling British affairs, it was essential that Britain prevailed in the war so Turkey could be conquered and its Ottoman Empire overthrown. The international Zionists agreed to bring the United States into the war to help bail out Britain. Through the insistence of his intimate advisor, Zionist agent Colonel Edward M. House, Woodrow Wilson brought the U.S. into the war in April 1917. And we know from the testimony of Benjamin Friedman and others that the Germans had actually, in effect, won that war, won World War I, and were just waiting to sign a peace treaty with Britain and all the other, you know, warring parties. But the Zionists deliberately delayed all of this in order for the Zionists to bring America into the war and ultimately conquer Germany. Isn't that the case?
Well, they had not finished their lobbying here at that time, and they had to make some more bribes because that's how they convinced people to do things, through the power of their filthy lucre. The ones that even take the bribes don't even like them.
Right.
For their love of filthy lucre, they will do their bidding as paid agents. Yes. And that includes higher-ups in the government. They not only get their government salary, they get their stipend from the kikes. So,
right.
kike cash.
Kikend. Get your kikend.
Kikend, yes.
Yes. All right, let's continue. The British forces took possession of Palestine from the Turks in 1917. Yes, and that was, who was it? General Allenby. General Allenby.
Yeah.
Though the war persisted, the Zionists were pressuring the British to formally issue a declaration that stated Great Britain favored, quote, the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people. Notice they don't call themselves Israel quite yet. In fact, even in 1933, when they issued a state of war declaration against Germany, they called themselves Judea. It wasn't until just before the founding of Israel, the Israeli state, that it occurred to them, well, maybe we should call this country Israel so we can fool everybody as to who we are.
And steal our name.
And steal our name. Exactly. On July 18, 1917, Lord Lionel Walter Rothschild submitted a draft declaration to Balfour expressing to him what the Zionists wanted. Lord Balfour addressed the British War Cabinet on the matter, and at that meeting, the declaration was adopted. 2 days later, on November 2, 1917, Lord Balfour wrote a letter to Lionel Rothschild enclosing a copy of the declaration and requesting him to communicate it to the Zionist Federation. This became known as the Balfour Declaration. Now, notice that this declaration was delivered to the War Cabinet, is not delivered to Parliament. Okay, so this was a wartime decision made by wartime bureaucrats and notably Jewish bankers who had no, and neither group had any right to take Palestine away from either the Turks or from the Arabs. So this is a behind the scenes.
They don't recognize anybody's rights when it interferes with what they want.
That's right. Yeah, they could care less about rights.
They do as they please with the power of money. They're not going to fight themselves. They're going to hire white thugs to do it for them.
That's right.
They're going to pay them off. Yeah. Militarize our police by 40 billion rounds of 40 caliber ammunition to cull the herd. That's what's coming.
Yes. Yes.
Well, they bought all that ammo, and yes, it was paid for by Jewish dollars.
That's right. By the way, there's a kind of mysterious scene at the very end of Peter O'Toole. What was the movie called? Lawrence of Arabia. Okay.
Yeah, where he wrecks his motorcycle.
Right. Well, yeah, that too, because he was not Peter O'Toole, but what's his name? Lawrence of Arabia. Can't remember his real name now. Colonel something Lawrence. Okay, and yeah, he was murdered by the Zionists because he wouldn't stop criticizing the Balfour Declaration. All right, he went on a speaking tour after the war and denounced the Zionists and denounced his own government. And so they had him murdered. So
he had a tragic accident.
Yeah, tragic accident. Yeah, a piano wire was strung across the road that he daily rode on his motorcycle. Okay.
So that sounds like the Arkansides to me. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Okay. To assure that Palestine would be in Zionist control, British forces were ordered to enter and occupy Jerusalem in December 1917. The highest of the ancient high places was now secure for the Jews, in other words, those Baal worship high places, to immigrate into and occupy. With the Balfour Declaration, which assured a Jewish national homeland in Palestine under Britain as the protecting power, many Jews now for the first time gave their support to the World Zionist Organization. At the conclusion of the war, the British received Palestine as a mandate under the League of Nations with the understanding that the Jewish people would be encouraged to settle there, but the discontent of the Arabs, who desired self-government and resented the immigration of the Jews, led to constant turmoil. Well, I guess if anybody's kind of like what's happening to America today, right? Barack Obama and the Jews are forcing us to accept Somalis, Africans, Arabs, Muslims, Mexicans, etc. And you don't think that causes chaos, turmoil?
Well, I think this latest vote just showed that the white Americans have had enough. And I wonder what's going to happen with this refusal to ratify the vote in a couple of states.
Yeah.
And the threat that they would flip some of the members of the people that cast the final vote, you know?
Yeah, Laura.
Or threatening those. And even though the people of the state vote for Trump, they're going to cast the vote in the Electoral College for Clinton because they've either been threatened or bribed.
Yeah, possibly.
And they're going to try to steal the election, and it's going to be hell to pay because everybody knows about it now.
Yes,
it's
Laura,
out there in the open, thanks to the alternative media like EFR and a lot of others.
Right. Yeah. Laura and I and Paul English this morning did a show about that subject, that Michigan and Arizona and possibly also New Hampshire have not yet finalized, they have not declared that Trump was the winner, even though obviously he was. Okay, so something's in the works. They're trying to finagle the results, and they need time. They have to declare by December 19th.
Okay? The votes are all in Arizona, 100% are counted.
Yes.
And they still won't declare it.
Right.
Something's rotten in Denmark.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
Not kosher. It's not kosher.
Something's rotten in D.C. The Zionist plan was being threatened with the sympathy and support with the Arabs had in Europe. Further, a spirit of nationalism was spreading through the Arabian world. Another dramatic scene was about to be acted out on center stage. Another political change was needed. The Edomite Zionist Jews were scheming world plans. By the way, this League of Nations, that was just another Jewish entity created by Jew Baker.
That was a predecessor to the United Nations.
Right. And that's the heading of the next section, the UN Partition Plan. Palestine had been occupied and ruled over by Arabs ever since the Muslim forces conquered it in 637 AD. The act of establishing a national home for one group of people in an occupied area such as this was an unprecedented innovation in international law, as admitted to by the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia. Yeah, we're simply taking it, right?
We've got the guns and the troops, and now we are the law.
Yeah, so innovation is a nice way of saying theft, right? Genocide. The Zionists faced the burden of convincing the world that the Jews should be given the right to occupy Palestine. That's why they had Schofield reference Bible written to convince Christians that the Jews are God's chosen and that they deserve Palestine. Since this country had already had a population which had been there for centuries, 1,300 years, it could not be simply handed over to the Jewish people. Yeah, the Arabs would have something to say about it. By the way, the Arabs are still having something to say about it. Okay.
You beat me to the punch, there, brother. I was just about it.
Right. Yeah, so it ain't a done deal yet, folks, and neither is the election. The British government made several unsuccessful attempts to quiet Arab feelings of hostility to the Zionist plans. Since the Balfour Declaration guarded the rights of the Arab population, no definite conclusions could be arrived at. It's very interesting, Pastor Steve, that whatever the Jews do, somebody is hostile to their plans. Somebody is always hostile to their plans. And typically what happens is that somebody gets killed, assassinated. Or if it turns out to be a bunch of people, they get wiped out. Like all the Arabs in Palestine, right?
Oh, so, Maryland just handed me a note.
Okay.
That Arizona declared Trump the winner today. What time did that occur?
Finally.
This afternoon, this time? I guess because we have outed them.
Okay.
Not just us at EFR, but there's a whole bunch of alt-right and alternative media websites that are outing these
people.
Even our buddy who will remain nameless, he's even on board with that.
Yes.
So
there was an internet outcry, put it that way. An internet outcry demanding that the states declare Trump the winner because all the vote was in, and what's the delay, right? Why is there any delay? There shouldn't be any delay. So thank God for that. Thank you, Maryland.
With Arizona doing that.
Yeah, that is a done deal.
That's going to make it even more difficult for them to do the other states.
Yeah, I called New Hampshire this morning and let the phone ring about 20 times, and there was no answer. It's kind of typical for... Yeah. Well, that's typical for a state bureaucracy. They just let the phone ring, and unless there's an answering machine, and then they never return your call. It's just like the prison system. Nobody ever picks up the phone. You get the answering machine, and they never call you back, right? That's how government works. That's how government works, folks, all right? All right, let's continue. Oh, that's great news. I don't think they can possibly overturn the results, even if Michigan doesn't declare. But Pennsylvania declared, and that was 20 votes. So
yeah, that was the biggie.
Yeah, that was the biggie. And so there's no way now with Arizona declaring that Hillary could possibly, swing enough votes back to her.
I think some of the reaction of our people have sent a message that it would not be a healthy idea,
right?
To do that.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, You know what? I might even just go around wearing a burqa because I can pose as an Arab woman and hide my crossbow in my burqa. Right? Just if anybody wants to get some ideas about changing the vote. Okay.
I've got my walking staff that's so nicely
carved. Your walking stick, right? The James Bond walking stick.
You ever watch any of those kung fu movies?
Yeah, right.
Well, I can do that stuff with that staff. All right, I've been working out with it again.
Yeah. Now, there's one other gambit they can pull, which is on December 19th, and Laura and I talked about this, that there have been cases where the electors changed their vote and did not vote for the person that the people chose them to vote for. Okay, so every elector, if the state of Illinois, for example, of course, Illinois voted for Hillary, so all the electors would cast their vote for Hillary, the ones from Illinois. But now in Arizona and Pennsylvania and Michigan, they all cast their votes for Donald Trump, so they must cast their votes for Donald Trump because that's the will of the people of their state. However, there have been times where particular electors cast their vote for somebody else, defying the will of the people. This has not changed the outcome of any election yet, right? But this is like one last trick they might have up their sleeves.
There's always a first time.
That's right. There's always a first time.
And when dealing with snakes, you never know which way they're going to slither.
That's right. And then, of course...
And Esau, Edom, the people that we are talking about, are behind all of this.
Yes. And then, of course, Donald could have an accident before Inauguration Day or even after Inauguration Day if the Jews don't get their way, right? Because they have assassinated many of our public officials. Many. Dozens, actually.
All right, Lincoln, JFK.
Yep.
To name a few.
Huey Long, right?
Huey Long.
Yeah, many. So all the American presidents who have been assassinated have been assassinated by the Rothschilds. There's no doubt about this. All right, well, let's continue here because we're talking about the assassination of an entire country, namely Palestine, by the Jews.
Sure.
Yes, okay. Now, another political change was needed, such as that only a war can bring, with Franklin D. Roosevelt and Winston Churchill willing partners of the Zionists. It took little effort to bring America and Britain into World War II. The aftermath of the war allowed the Jewish Zionists to establish their international organization called the United Nations in October 24, 1945. In 1947, the British gave up their Palestine mandate and placed the Palestine problem in the hands of the Zionist-created, communist-controlled United Nations. The General Assembly approved the plans to place Jerusalem under international control and to partition Palestine into two separate Arab and Jewish states. Now, by the way, the United Nations is just another illegal organization created by the Jews, right? By the Rothschilds. So, and it's not a democratic organization, as many people falsely believe. None of those members that take seats in the United Nations are elected by anybody. They're appointed.
Nope.
It's all they appointed. Won't. Okay.
Yep. I'm looking at this picture on this page, Eli, and it shows President Harry Truman receiving a Jewish Torah scroll from Zionist Chaim Weizmann in May of 1948. Well, little do the American people know, but Harry Truman's birth name was Solomon Shiffrin.
Uh-huh.
He was a Jew.
Right, yeah.
As was his predecessor, Franklin Delano Rosenfeld.
And his successor, Ike the Kike.
Their name.
Right.
To Roosevelt.
Right.
And that was their subtle change, like they've changed everything else. Like Brad Pitt.
Okay. Pittstein. Brad Pittstein?
he's a blonde white guy. No, he's not. He's a Jew.
Uh-huh.
Hiding and pretending to be a white guy.
That's right. That's
look
right.
What he's married to and their adoption of all the little nigglets.
Yeah.
These people are excellent at hiding.
Right. Hiding them.
they promote race mixing.
Oh, for sure.
So they blend in with the indigenous population, not just of this country, but all the countries that they infiltrate.
Right.
So they can hide within the population. They don't look different.
Yes.
But
yes.
They are different in the DNA inside, and their behavior will betray them.
Yes. And so this totally illegitimate organization called the United Nations, then on May 14, 1948, proclaimed the Jewish state. Okay, so if anybody thinks that the Jews weren't entirely behind orchestrating this entire deal, it means you don't know any history. Okay, simply. And then the first president was Chaim Weizmann, busy guy, and the prime minister was David Ben-Gurion, who was a Buddhist by religion, but a Jew by ethnicity. Okay, and so here we see that the Jews always get what they want. Always. They keep on finagling until they get what they want. And by the way, one of the major terrorist events in history was foisted upon the British, the British in the King David Hotel. None other than Menachem Begin set off a bomb that killed 91 British. Killed 91 British. British, mind you, not Palestinians, British. And the reason for that was that Menachem Begin and those other Jews wanted the British out. They wanted the British to let go of the mandate and turn Palestine over to the Jews 100%. And that's obviously what happened. Okay.
Well, they didn't want anybody from the race of Adam in control.
That's right. That's right. And so here, folks, the modern terrorism was founded by Jews. They even admit it. They even admit that they not only admit it,
they brag on it.
They brag on it. That's right. That's
the
right.
The Irgund.
That's right.
Was a terrorist. They were the ones that were blowing up stuff and assassinating people when Britain was in control.
Right. Yeah. And the Stern Gang. The Irgun, the Stern Gang, there were many others, all Jewish terrorist gangs.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, right. Okay, he continues. The Jewish author Arthur Koestler states that the right of the state of Israel to exist is not based on the origins of the Jewish people as being Israel, nor on the covenant of Abraham with God. That is correct. Rather, it is based on international law. No, it isn't. It's simply based on false claims made by Jews, which cannot be mistaken for international law.
They say it's international law, therefore it must be true, right?
If they say it's international law, it must be international law, right? Whatever the Jew says must be true. Okay? The Jews have not possessed the land according to biblical requirements surrounding Zion. Zion is actually, I think, the highest hill in Jerusalem. It was called Zion. The Israeli state was founded upon a systematic program of violence, deceit, murder, and war instigated by the Jews, and this fact alone should dismiss the idea that they are Israel coming to Zion. We should now begin to see the modus operandi of Judaism and Zionism and how they are not the ways of Israel, but of Edom. The Jewish world program has used political upheavals and financial power to obtain its objective and terrorism. This was expressed by the Jewish Zionist leader, Theodor Herzl, who stated, "When we sink, we become a revolutionary proletariat, the subordinate officers of the Revolutionary Party. When we rise, there rises also our terrible power of the purse," which is an outstanding quote from the Jewish state by Theodor Herzl, who was the founder of the modern Zionist movement. Okay.
Listen to the language that he used. We become a revolutionary proletariat, comrade.
That's right.
Fellow traveler.
Yes.
The Revolutionary Party. Communism is Jewish.
That's right.
You can hear the ilk of the language that this kike used. And he's spouting the commie line.
That's right.
That's what he's spouting.
Yeah.
And it's then, the party line of the Communist Party.
Yeah. So he's admitting that we control communism, and then he admits that they control international finance capitalism. It's a very cleverly worded sentence. Very cleverly worded.
Well, capitalism is a mirror image of communism.
Right.
Monopoly and they're both Jewish.
That's right. Yeah, capitalism, meaning the Jews provide the money, the capital.
Right.
It's not free enterprise, right, folks, and it's not the American system. It's the Jewish system. Okay. One more paragraph here on this topic. Zionism is part of a program for the political conquest of the world, the UN being its chief instrument or super government, as mentioned in the protocols. The possessing of the ancient lands and holy places of Israel is only a ruse so that the Zionist Jews can sucker the gullible Christians into supporting them as being God's chosen people, fulfilling prophecy. Meanwhile, the Zionists, yeah, isn't that a farce? Meanwhile, the Zionists are free to terrorize, murder, sabotage, spy, and get billions in free aid. Jewish Palestine is a communistic and atheist-ridden monstrosity whose only ambition is not to serve the world, but to rule it.
How long ago did Charlie write this?
I believe this was published in 1972, if I'm not mistaken.
Man.
Okay. Yeah, he was right on the money.
Oh, he nails it right here. This guy's brilliant.
Yes, he is.
He really is. I'm sorry that he's gone.
Yeah,
we could use more like him today, but he is just so accurate. I mean, he's done his homework.
Yes.
He's got everything documented with the history and the photographs and maps and
photos. Photos, right. Okay, so the balance of this chapter goes on to talk about how the Jews are not, and that the New Jerusalem is not the Old Jerusalem, right?
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I would encourage people just get a copy of their own. But let's move on to Chapter 5, World Conflict and Adversity. A common theme found in most plays, novel stories, movies, etc. is that of conflict, usually existing between two of the main characters in a script. In the play Julius Caesar, there was a conflict between Caesar and his conspirators, Brutus and Cassius. In the story of Cinderella, we find a conflict between the title character and her wicked stepmother. Without this conflict and opposition, the entire plot becomes pointless, as it gives life and meaning to the events and actions of the characters. Some manner of conflict or struggle is actually expected, just as they exist in nature, in our lives, in history, and in stories, usually in the form of the age-old conflict between good and evil. Yeah, well, without this, it wouldn't be much of a story, right? It wouldn't make a very good book or a very good movie, right? So, if the characters don't engage in any sort of conflict. Today, even the casual observer to the events that are transpiring in the world can perceive the existence of a conflict or struggle between ideologies, philosophies, laws, religion, governments, etc., which produce the trouble, misfortunes, and adversity in the world. However, it is not apparent to most who the actors or individuals are at the forefront of this conflict in the world, or why the conflicts and adversity exist. Well, here, let me just bring this up to date, because these demonstrations against Trump after the election, orchestrated again by Soros and other Jews.
Well, they're busing them in on private charter carrier buses.
Right, right.
These are not local people that are rising up in their local communities. These are outside paid agitators.
That's right, that's right. And so what we're seeing here is, and typically, not that these people aren't true believers, whether they're bussed in or not, because what we're seeing is college students who have been indoctrinated into communism by their Jewish college professors at places like University of Michigan, Michigan State, University of Illinois, University of Wisconsin, or University of Oregon, Oregon State, etc., etc. Because all of these universities have been taken over by radical left Jewish professors, in many cases Jewish management of these universities as well, all radicalizing these college students into believing that Donald Trump is a Klansman. They actually believe he's a Klansman. This is how brainwashed these college students are. So I think it was either Khrushchev or Lenin that said, you know, give us two generations of your children and we will take over America. And they have definitely taken over our educational system. There's no doubt about it. and not just the colleges, from top to bottom. And this is Carter. Carter gave the Jews the Department of Education, by which they have taken total control of the curriculum of universities, colleges, high schools, grade schools, and even kindergarten. They're starting to teach transgenderism and all kinds of degeneracy, even in kindergarten already. Okay? And this is what the liberals are all about. Total degeneracy. And they hate Trump because he doesn't approve of this degeneracy. This is what's going on, folks. This is where we're at. Okay? So now he gets into, which is biblical stuff, where he talks about the two children that were in Rebecca's womb. Toward the beginning of God's script, the Bible, we read, oops, my screen went blank, sorry, folks. We read of the character Esau making his first appearance on stage as he is being born to Rebecca and Isaac along with his twin brother Jacob. The scene opens with Isaac's request to God on behalf of his wife. And by the way, the Bible is a very entertaining novel type book if you pay attention and get into the stories, right?
But there's a lot of action there.
A lot of conflict. Sex, yep. Drugs, rock and roll. all over the place, right? And this is one such scene. This is a highly dramatic scene. I'm surprised nobody's made a movie about this, Pastor Steve. But I guess the Jews don't want to have anybody know anything about Edom.
This is a little too close to home for them to allow that to be produced.
Turned into a movie, right.
They're already outed and people are getting Jew savvy.
That's right.
And yes. Even Alex Jones has made a few comments here lately.
Yeah, yes, Yeah, and even Alex Jones is now trumpeting.
It'd be nice if he would flip and come over on Yahweh's side.
Yeah, I don't think so.
He's going to do that because of his masters.
Right. Yeah, right.
Too
much
to lose at this point.
Yeah, his whole operation is owned and operated by Jews, and he's got a Jewish wife, which makes his children Jewish. There's no way he's going to flip. He's not going to flip. So let's continue. And by the way, and Paul Joseph Watson, I saw a video. You know, he's another member of the team there. He was asked, you know, because he talks about all these conspiracies, and so does Alex Jones. And so somebody asked him, well, what about the Jews? And he said, there's no Jewish conspiracy. So this is Paul Joseph Watson at InfoWars, right, saying, no, there's no Jewish conspiracy.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. So that's where that's at. Okay. All right. So the scene opens with Isaac's request to God on behalf of his wife. Verse 21. And Isaac prayed to Yahweh for his wife because she was barren, and Yahweh answered him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. And the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of Yahweh. And Yahweh said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. And I don't think we really need to go into Wiseman's discussion here because it's such a well-known topic in identity, okay? But for the benefit of the listeners, Pastor Steve, why don't you go into who the two people were, who the two sons were, and who their progeny are today.
All right, well, you had Esau, who came out first. They were battling before they were born. They were divided. They were divided in enmity because the connotation of the wording in the Hebrew is that of enmity between the two.
Okay.
Esau came out all red and hairy like a cloak of hair. And Jacob came out smooth. And there was no real time between they were born, the time between the births. They just popped out one after another.
Okay.
And the nature of Esau from his birth was that of deceit, greed, lust for power, violence. He was a violent man.
Right.
Jacob was a man of peace. He was smooth. He was orderly. He was good at business. Right. He took care of his parents very, very well. And he was of a completely opposite nature. They were mirror images.
Yes.
As far as nature. Good on one side, bad on the other side.
Right.
Esau was rebellious from the beginning. He rebelled against Yahweh. Didn't want to take wives from the Hebrew stock. Went to cursed seed people to obtain wives. And later on, when Jacob and Rebecca, or Isaac and Rebecca saw his behavior, they constrained the servant that was sent to find him a wife and says, "You shall not take a wife of the local Canaanite people for my son. You will go to the Hebrew community over here and you will get him a Hebrew wife."
Right.
Because the daughters of Heth, the Hittites, that Esau married were of great grief to Rebekah and Isaac.
And Isaac, yes.
My life is miserable because of these two. They were pagans. They were lewd. They were loud. They were rude and crude.
Kind of like Jews today.
Well, right. Yeah. This is the bloodline that this man married into. And thus Yahweh says in all these passages how he hates Esau.
Yeah, Don Rickles, Rodney Dangerfield, Sarah Silverman, rude, crude, loud Jews, right? So
You got Genesis 25:34, 26:34, 27:41, 28:9, Jeremiah, Obadiah, all of the book of Obadiah is against Esau, Edom.
Amen.
All of it, every bit of it. It goes all the way up. It's in the New Testament how he hates it.
That's right.
So this business of Jesus loves everybody. Well, no. No, he doesn't. Yahweh doesn't love everybody. Yahweh has his hatreds.
Yeah, and Yahweh, he has enemies.
Yahweh hates the Canaanite stock that worship false idols.
Right. And Jesus has enemies.
Jesus had many enemies. He has enemies today. And it just goes on and on and on and on in Scripture about this enmity. And they play this down in the Judeo-Christian churches today. They won't teach this.
Yes, they will not mention it at all. Absolutely.
Oh, that's part of the apostasy. They won't touch it with a stolen 10-foot pole.
That's right. A Jewish 10-foot pole.
10-foot. Well, I said stolen.
Yes, okay, gotcha. All right, next heading.
This is not over. It's continuing.
Oh, no, it won't be. It ain't over until it's over, folks. And that's when Jesus comes. Then it's going to be over. All right, the Jew versus the Christian. The evidences of the God-ordained conflict and struggle between Esau and Jacob can be followed down through history to the present times. World conflicts, wars, persecutions, and social struggles are a result of two different systems generated by two different peoples, descended from Esau and Jacob. While there are differences among any two races or nations, among no other two has such an antagonistic and conflicting relationship existed as between Jews and white Christian people. Throughout history, these two peoples have been at odds with one another. Their manner of law, government, religion, and ideologies are diametrically opposite to one another. It is an ancient conflict between the ancient adversaries Esau, that is the Jews, and Jacob, white Christians. Now, let me, because a lot of people listening, especially white nationalists, aren't aware of this historical antagonism between Jews and Christians. Okay? It's only in the last century that Christians have warmed up to Zionism and the Jews. And that's because of a 30 trillion dollar propaganda campaign to propagandize the Christian denominations into accepting the Jews as the Israel of the Bible, right?
Well, they have been preaching this nonsense since they wormed their way into the seminaries, and they have turned the churches of this nation, which used to be charitable organizations that obeyed the scripture and took care of the widows and the orphans in the community. Now there are social service agencies, and the churches have been turned into 501c3 businesses. They are corporate entities.
Very much like Barack Obama's, social change organizations, whatever they call them.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't pay attention to him.
And that's what the Christian churches have become. They're no longer Christian. They're change agents, social change agencies. Is what they've become.
They're teaching Talmudism,
which
is Jewish. The Jews don't go by the Bible. They go by the Talmud. Okay?
That's right.
Different. Please do not confuse the Bible with what the Jews use for their religion.
Yes. So, okay, middle of page 51. The Talmud teaches the opposite laws and principles from that of the Bible. Even where a sound and well-recognized moral law of God is concerned, the Talmud, which is the true source of Jewish teaching, it's the true Jewish book of religion, the Talmud in every instance tries to find some exception to it. The exception, deviation, and modification is then justified by the words and teaching of some ancient rabbi or the sages, as they are called in the Talmud, or by some modern rabbi. If they can't find an ancient rabbi to approve of evil, a modern rabbi will fill the bill. The Talmud is not a book of godly morals or virtuous ethics, but is replete with perversion and teachings of sexual debauchery. Contrary to popular belief, the Jews are not followers of the Old Testament law, since they are not the people of the Old Testament, namely the Israelites. In fact, the Book of Sanhedrin, section 88b, the Talmud teaches that its precepts and laws are of a greater stringency than in respect to those of the Bible. It also says that when a Jew claims there is no breach, of Talmudic law, he may act even though a biblical law may be transgressed. It is the Talmud that guides the life and spirit of the Jew. In other words, it says that a biblical law may be transgressed. In other words, the Jews give themselves the right to violate the laws of Yahweh and still claim to be God's chosen people.
Boy, I'm reading this chart over on the left.
Okay.
And it's got a chart in this publication, and it's called The Two Most Contrasting Religions. I will read, if you don't mind, I'd like to read some of this.
Okay, sure. Ten minutes.
Judaism from the Talmud. The Talmud approves of sodomy. If one committed sodomy with a child of less than 9 years, no guilt is incurred. Child molestation.
Right.
Christianity from the Bible. Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is abomination. The Talmud approves of child sacrifice to idols. He who gives of his seed to Molech incurs no punishment. at Sanhedrin 64a. They used to throw their babies in the mouth of a big bronze idol of Molech, and they had a fire down in the belly, and they burned the children alive as a sacrifice, their own children.
But today, it's white children they throw into. Bleed them.
Prohibits child sacrifice to idols in our Bible. Whoever gives any of his seed to Molech, he shall surely be put to death. They killed these horrible, horrible child murderers.
Yes.
Cursing parents is allowed in the Talmud. One who curses his parents isn't punished unless he curses them by divine name. And in our Bible, he that curses his father or mother shall be put to death. Allows enchanting. This is witchcraft.
Yes.
It is permitted to consult by a charm the spirits of oil and eggs and make incantations. And in our Bible, the Christian Bible, none of you shall be an enchanter or a charmer or consulter with familiar spirits. That's a conjured spirit.
Yes. Didn't Saul do that?
Here's one that they're trying to pass now.
Right.
Bestiality. Women having intercourse with a beast can marry a priest. The act is but a mere wound. Yebamoth 59b. Our Bible, you shall not lie with any beast, nor shall any woman stand before a beast to lie with it. That's Leviticus 18:23.
So don't even think about it. Don't even think about it.
Beast means two-legged beasts as well, brothers and sisters.
That's right. That's right.
Harlots is lawful in the Talmud. A harlot's hire is permitted, for what the woman has received is legally a gift.
Never mind that harlotry is forbidden. Yeah, go ahead.
Our Bible, the Christian Bible, she that plays the whore in her father's house shall be put to death.
Well, now, wait a minute. Now, I can see an exception. What if she goes outside the house? Right? See, that's how rabbis think, folks.
Then they stone both of them.
That's right.
Okay. Blasphemy is allowed in the Talmud. One can revile the divine name if mentally applying it to some other object.
Wow.
Blasphemy is punishable in our Bible. He that blasphemes the name of Yahweh shall surely be put to death.
Amen.
Vows. Giving your word to do something. In the Talmud, one may declare, every vow which I may make in the future shall be null. In other words, they can lie and deceive you and cheat you and steal from you.
That's right.
And it's okay. In our Bible, if a man vows, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that he spoke. In Numbers chapter 30, verse 2, honorable behavior.
Now remember, the white race used to be based on honor, the code of honor.
That's right.
A man's word is his bond. The Jews never had that.
Murder is condoned in the Talmud. If 10 men smote a man with 10 staves and he died, they are exempt from punishment. In other words, if one of these gangs beat a white man to death, that's okay.
Yep.
In our Bible, he that smites a man with a stave so he dies, he is a murderer and shall be put to death because he used a weapon.
That's right.
Now there's a contrast right there of their Talmud with our Christian Bible. That is an abomination.
Yes.
Please, 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 white nationalists, don't confuse Israelites of the white race with these satanic Jews. We are not Jews. We are of true Israel, and we go by the Christian Bible that supports morality and honor and decency. The Jews are exactly the opposite from we are. Over you, Eli. Yes.
Well, he quotes from Jewish publications again. The Talmud is to this day the circulating heart's blood of the Jewish religion. whatever laws, customs, or ceremonies we Jews observe, whether we are Orthodox, Conservative, Reform, or merely spasmodic sentimentalists, we follow the Talmud. It is our common law. I believe this is Hermann Wauk. The numbers are fuzzy, so I'm not getting the footnotes properly. But, and then another one, the Jewish religion as it is today traces its descent without a break through all the centuries from the Pharisees, those hated Pharisees in the New Testament, folks. Their leading ideas and methods found expression in a literature of enormous extent, of which a very great deal is still in existence. The Talmud is the largest and most important single member of that literature. So we see that the Jews constantly admit that their religion is not the Bible, but their God-forsaken Talmud.
And Talmud means study. That's what that means, Talmud. It's the rabbinical study of the Edomites, who were not Aharonic priests, and they brought it from Babylon, which it says in this next sentence.
Yes, yes. Go ahead and read that.
The Talmud is actually the, quote, the product of the Palestinian and Babylonian schools, end quote, and is generally called the Babylonian Talmud. And Yeshua, Messiah, called that the tradition of the elders. Well, that is the traditions of the elders of Zion.
Right.
And they don't even spell Zion right. Zion, as it's spelled in Scripture, is T-S-I-Y-O-N, not Z-I-O-N.
Okay.
So they changed the spelling and just pervert the Hebrew. They don't speak Hebrew. They speak Yiddish.
Yes, yes.
When I hear them speaking, I can't understand a thing they're saying, right. But I know it's not good.
Right. And it's not Hebrew either.
All
right. And one more quotation here from Bernard Lazar, a Jewish author. It is the Jews who originated biblical exegesis. Actually, exegesis is the wrong word. In parentheses here, a critical analysis of the Bible. It's actually eisegesis, which is a distortion of the Bible. Just as they were the first to criticize the forms and doctrines of Christianity. Truly has Darmstadter written, quote, the Jew was the apostle of unbelief, and every revolt of mind originated with him, unquote. So here we see, Pastor Steve, so many people, all the people that Wiseman is quoting in this book are Jew savvy, including the Jews themselves, in admitting that they are not the people of the book. Well, their religion is not the religion of the Bible. They admit it freely. If you bother to look, they admit it freely.
Well, not only that, they have been going along with the mantra that they were white people for so long. Jews are white. We're white. We're white. Now that they have incited the blacks to constant ongoing violence against white people, they're, oh, no, no, we're Jewish. We're not white. We're not white. You see how it is?
Well, yeah.
They're Christians. They change your appearance to suit the situation.
That's right. That's right.
They are serpents. They are snakes. They are Communists. Children of the serpent.
Yes.
The serpent. Race.
Yeah, and they do have evil. The upper hand. They do have the upper hand at the moment, so now they can come clean and say, no, we were never white. We hate white people, actually, and we're going to lord it over you the first chance we get, right? So this is where it is today. It's the state of the race. It's the state of the enmity between the Jews and the white race, folks. That's where we're at right now. And hopefully Donald Trump keeps his word and makes the changes to this Talmudic rule that we have in America right now and makes some important changes. We'll see. We won't know if he's going to keep his promises or break his promises. We'll find out.
How much time do we have here, Eli?
Yeah. Well, we're just about there. All right, folks, thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. See you next time.
Shalom aleichem, my brothers and sisters. Peace be unto you.